Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us today. Today, we have a very interesting topic, and a lot of people are having a lot of fear around this conversation. So many times I talk to patients or I talk to family members or friends, and I say to them, what is going to happen when you really don't feel well? What's going to happen when you kind of hit that wall? What's going to happen when you're not able to speak for yourself? At the end, when you have a medical condition or a car accident, or if you have a life-threatening illness, what are you going to do? And just the other day, I had someone say to me that health was so overrated. I'm not going to worry about those things. I'm just going to keep running on my train. Well, you know, when you keep running that train at high speed, eventually the wheels will burn off and you're going to hit the wall. And then if you don't have certain things in place, you really have no control and you will be at the mercy of others. Today we're going to be talking about five wishes. Five wishes is a small packet of information, and it is 12 pages, and it just talks about a few different things that you should consider when these things occur. Things like, I want to have life support treatment. I don't know what that is, but in the five wishes it talks about it. I want someone to be able to help me or move me to a state when I need further medical care. After I die, I would like my body to be buried or cremated. How many people even talk about this stuff? And I can tell you what we're here to talk about today with five wishes is no fear. It is absolutely no fear. Five wishes is a conversation. You just fill it out, you sign it, and you say, those are things I never thought of. You write them down. You set it to the side and you go on living. Because really, when you have this paper in place, you don't have the fear of not knowing what will come up down the tracks. So today, my guest is Mr. Paul Malley, and he is the president of Aging with Dignity since 2002. He is going to be talking to us about five wishes and the work of Ed Tuohy, who also was working a lot with the Five Wishes and Mother Teresa, and that's what we'll be talking about today. So welcome to the show, Paul, and thank you for being with us.
Well, thank you, Dr. Gallagher. It's great to be with you, and great topic of discussion that you chose for today.
And don't you believe that the Five Wishes is just to take away the fear or that anticipation of something you don't know?
Sure, that's certainly part of it. And I would say that one of the greatest gifts that Five Wishes brings to a family is the gift of peace of mind. Because in your introduction, you talked about asking people the question, what would happen if you become very sick and you're not able to speak for yourself? And just by asking that question, if we haven't thought about it, it might make us very anxious, because our first thought might be, well, I don't know. I don't know who would make decisions for me, and I don't know what would happen. Right. But if you've had the conversation and you've filled out five wishes, you have that peace of mind to say, well, I hope that doesn't happen, but if it does, if someone in my family gets sick, we've talked about it, and we know exactly what will happen, and that's the peace of mind that Five Wishes can bring.
Can you tell us how Five Wishes came about? Because to me, you had asked me before the show, you know, how long have I known about it? It seems like I've known about it forever. Somewhere, you know, years and years ago, I've just known. And a lot of people don't know what this is, so how did it really come about?
Well, it started because we wanted to create something different and something better than the traditional living will. We're a small advocacy organization. We were founded by a man named Jim Tuohy, and Jim worked with Mother Teresa. He was her legal counsel for many years and worked in her homes for the dying in Calcutta, India, and in Mexico, and in Washington, D.C., a home that her sisters ran caring for men with AIDS in the 1980s. And I mentioned that because it was that experience was important because it guided the development of five wishes. So that as we talk about care at the end of life and how we treat people when they're very sick, we brought a different perspective than just the traditional legal and medical concerns. We brought the perspective of what does human dignity mean? And if we acknowledge that each person has that human dignity, how do we honor it and maintain it, especially when someone's vulnerable, when they're sick? So when we created Five Wishes, we knew that the concept of living wills had been around for a few decades, really since the 1970s. And at the end of the 1990s, we created Five Wishes as a pilot project in Florida, and this was our main goal. We wanted to create a document and a way to have this conversation so that families would feel comfortable talking about it in their family living room or around the kitchen table, so that they didn't feel like they had to go to a lawyer's office or wait until a medical crisis. Certainly, you don't want to have this conversation for the first time in an emergency room. So that was our goal, put this in the hands of families, let people make decisions for themselves in a place where they feel comfortable, and also to make decisions about the things beyond just the life support treatment that you mentioned, but also giving instructions to their family about what good care means to them. Who do they want to be with them? How do they want to be kept comfortable? Those sorts of things. And it's been amazing. So since 1998, when we introduced Five Wishes nationally, we've now distributed more than 20 million copies of the document. It's the most widely used advance directive in all of the world and meets the legal requirements of most states.
You know, so many times people would go into the hospital and they sign all these papers. And the people on the other side of the desk always say to you, oh, this is all of your important papers to take care of you. And you as the patient are thinking, they know what they're doing. They know everything that they're going to be doing right. I trust them, and I'm going to leave it into their hands. Well, you really have said nothing about what you may want, and really you've just signed away all of your wishes. I mean, you really have no wishes at that time. I had told you the one time when I had gone to the ER, and I was a single parent at the time, and I was with my daughter, and I had horrendous migraine. And I would never go to the ER except that I simply was having difficulty driving home. So I went there, and they said, well, as soon as we give you this medication, we need to wait till somebody comes to get your daughter. And I'm like, well, I don't have anybody but maybe 10 states over to come and get my daughter. And they're like, well, we'll just wait then for family services to come. And you just don't realize that if you don't have something in place or someone to be able to help you out, you're really kind of in a spot because they are going to take over and things are going to happen that you may or may not wish. And that's not about doom and gloom, but it is about saying that this is what reality is.
And sure, and I think
when you go to the ER, you have to remember, and I drill this home to everybody, is the minute they give you a medication, you no longer speak for yourself. You can even see it when you watch. They don't come in and ask you questions anymore. They're done asking you. That's it.
And you know, I think all of us who have either had that experience ourselves or accompanied a family member in a hospital or coming into an emergency setting, we see that, at least for myself, it's not ground that I feel comfortable in, right? I don't have a medical degree. I don't have a background in clinical healthcare delivery. So, and most of us are in that place where we feel like this isn't our home turf. And part of what we want to do is help people feel a little bit more comfortable and have that peace of mind to know that they have made some decisions ahead of time so that they can relay those decisions to healthcare providers. Because we work with a lot of the providers, the hospitals and hospices and nurses, and there's certainly good intentions there, and they're juggling lots of different things all at one time and trying to take care of lots of different patients all at one time. But the more that we can do to help them know what we want, the better, and the more likely that we'll get the care that we want. And especially for families, I've been in situations where my grandmother, for example, I was with my grandparents really through many of the years of their aging process. I couldn't tell you the number of times that we received a call from the nursing home saying that my grandmother would be transported to a hospital. And so we would go and meet them there. And it always seemed like this time of chaos and uncertainty. So part of what we're trying to do is inject into that atmosphere of chaos and uncertainty some peace of mind, and that's what Five Wishes can bring.
And I think that's what you and I are both trying to say is that, you know, notice the things that are common. We're saying that events happen in hospitals. An event could even happen in a doctor's office. An event could happen in a grocery store. It could happen you're driving down the street and you have a car wreck. There are a zillion different ways that an event could happen in which you are no longer, that's the end of the line. That's the cement wall, because going forward you are not able to make those choices. And you may say, oh well, I'm fully comprehend, I understand what you're saying, I can make a decision. But when the legality of it comes along and you've already taken that medication or you're in a certain medical condition, that is no longer your option. So that's very important to know, is that we're not saying you're not able to make that decision. What we're saying is legally the hospital or those other facilities will not allow you to make that decision. So it's really important to know that, because, you know, it's really hard to, when someone says, I'm going to take away your control or your power. That's why Five Wishes is really your power and your control, because you've already documented it as a legal document. And Five Wishes is a legal document in 42 states, correct?
That's correct. And so when it kicks in, and this is an important point, because if you're in the hospital or if a loved one is in the hospital, as long as you have the ability to make your own medical decisions, you should be making your own medical decisions. Doctors and nurses should be asking you to make decisions and talking with your family. What we're talking about is what happens if you lose that ability, that ability to make your own medical decisions. Five Wishes, as you said, in a format that meets the legal requirements in 42 states, it lets you name a healthcare agent, so a trusted person who would be your voice if you're not able to speak for yourself. So that way, if you're, and you've given the example of being in a car accident, or if you're recovering from surgery and you haven't come out of anesthesia yet, but you can't make your own medical decisions, the question comes up, who makes decisions for you? And Five Wishes can provide that answer for your doctors and your healthcare providers to know the person that you've named who you trust to make medical decisions for you. So that comes into play way before a person may be living with a terminal illness or thinking that they are near the end of life. It can be just at any point in time where you lose capacity to make your own medical decisions. And because of that, as you've already touched on a little bit, Dr. Gallagher, this is not just a conversation for people who are older or who have a serious illness. This is a conversation. This is an important thing for everyone to think about, everyone who's 18 or over. We talk about it with college students. We talk about it with employers when they do lunch and learn presentations for their employees. So 20-somethings, 30-somethings, 40-somethings on up. And the best way for this to happen, really, is when a family comes together, when a group of friends come together, and they say, we're committed to caring well for each other, and we're going to talk about how to do that. So a family that might come together and have the grandparents and the parents and the adult grandchildren all having this conversation together, with every one of them filling out their five wishes, not just the older generation, but all of the adults in a family. And having a conversation and affirming for each other, if you get sick, we'll be here to help you. We'll be here to honor your decisions. And we'll be here to safeguard your human dignity.
And also, it is important when you are looking at this, who is your health agent, because a lot of times, if you don't have papers in place, they'll go to the spouse. And that spouse may or may not be the best person to make those decisions. I know myself, you know, my daughter, you know, knows a lot about healthcare. She might be my number one choice over a spouse, because she may be able to make those medically efficient answers much quicker and be able to be more knowledgeable. You may have another person in your family that may say, they work far away and my other son is local. I would rather my son do that. You know, so there are different things that you need to have the conversation about, because you'll say, you know, that might not be the best choice. It may be the one that everyone thinks about, but it may not be the best one either. I can remember when my grandmother was in the hospital. She was 98 years old, and I was in there trying to help her, you know, with the decisions and stuff, and uncle had come along and took me out and says, you don't make her decisions, and that was it. So there is a lot of push and control in knowing. At the end, I think there's a lot of family arguments and there's a lot of power plays about who will make those decisions for various reasons. And to know that ahead of time, it just eases a lot of tension.
It does. And, you know, we've heard, unfortunately, some very difficult stories, oftentimes right. with siblings who may have yes. disagreed about what to do for mom or dad or whatever the family dynamics were. There were very difficult conversations that happened around the death of a parent and what type of treatment they would have wanted or not wanted. And some, unfortunately, siblings that never speak to each other again after a parent
right.
dies because of arguments that mm-hmm. in many cases could have been avoided if some decisions were made in advance. And you hit on an important point, and that is that if you don't designate a healthcare agent, if you don't name someone to be your voice, mm-hmm. then in most cases, state statute picks the person for you. And right. in most cases, it's a near relative. It usually starts with, if you're married, your spouse. If not, then an adult child. And then it goes down a list, 13 or 14 people long, and it can include siblings and cousins and aunts and uncles and close friends.
Mm-hmm.
But that is important to know, that if you just think, well, I'll leave it to chance, or I know my family all know what I want and they'll be able to decide. Sometimes that's not always the case, but the state statutes do make decisions for you if you don't make those decisions for yourself ahead of time. And even if you're thinking, well, yes, I'm married and so I would want my spouse to be my healthcare agent, it still makes sense to fill out a document like Five Wishes, because that affirms
right.
your choice. It says, yes, I do want my husband or my wife to be my healthcare decision maker if I can't make my own decisions.
And there are times, too, in this ever-changing world with dementia and Alzheimer's and different other medical conditions, where people, when they get a little bit older, their choices are not so much what you would be hoping for. In other words, I had looked at something someone had written yesterday, and they said that, oh, I'm really sick and my husband is making choices right now and they're not in my best interest. And it's, yeah, you know, that's definitely a problem, because sometimes some people don't know what is in your best interest. You haven't had the conversation, and maybe your spouse or your other significant other is not that person. And also in the case of an adult child that is single, they may go to your
sure.
parents, and your parents may have dementia or Alzheimer's or may not even have talked to you for 10 years, but yet they're going to be making decisions for you. So
that's
it's
right.
really important to have that, you know, stated. And I mean,
that's
we're
right.
spending a lot of time on this part, but this is probably the most important part, don't you think?
It is. It's definitely one of the most important parts, because the person that you pick is really, because they're supposed to be your voice, standing in for you if you're
mm-hmm.
not able to speak for yourself, they're really the point person. And also, they're given the legal power to interpret instructions that you've given in Five Wishes, or if you've written any other instructions in any other documents. So naming that healthcare agent is important, because they're the ones that are going to look at the directions that you've given in Five Wishes or in any advance directive that you fill out, and they're the ones that will be sitting with the doctor or the healthcare team when they talk about what a diagnosis is and what the options are to consider, and then ultimately making treatment decisions. So you're right, that is important. And I would say, you know, there are two schools of thought on this. Some people would say all you should do is name a healthcare agent and pick someone you trust and stop there. Mm-hmm. I think that's not enough. I think it's important to pick someone you trust, but then to give them a little bit of a trail to work with. Give them some written instructions about your preferences regarding life support treatment and your care preferences so that they're not expected to just guess out of or pick something out of a hat to figure out what you would have wanted. And also, if there are some family dynamics that might lead to challenges within the family, that healthcare agent then, who you've named, isn't left to be by themselves without any support. They can turn to your five wishes and say, well, I know what Mom wanted because she named me as a healthcare agent, but then she also wrote here what she wanted regarding life support treatment and that she wanted not to be in pain and that she wanted pain medicine or that she wanted these forms of pain relief. That helps that healthcare agent to do what you want him or her to do, and that is to stand up for you and to make sure you get the care that you wanted. So that's our advice, is to make sure you name a healthcare agent, but then don't stop there. Give them some instructions. Give them some backup information and background information on how best to make decisions for you.
And also to realize that a healthcare person cannot be your physician. That is number one. A lot of people think that your doctor's going to make all the decisions and you think you sign a paper away or you think that they will know in your best interest what you want. And I've seen people on life support before who would go into a panic mode when they would be waking up and being realizing what was going on, that was not what they wanted. And that it definitely puts them into that panic mode that they then feel that they may as just well, just lay there because there really is no more control that they have. So this conversation about life support is very important about, what you may or may not want prior to being in that situation.
Sure. And even for family members, it can be difficult because a lot of times it's not black and white. It's not definite. So say, for example, if a person is brought into the hospital, their heart had stopped, they were resuscitated, there's a question about life support treatment, and maybe the doctors say, we're not sure what will happen, but we know that it's required at this point, and we hope that your mother or father will respond to it. What would you like us to do? Those are very difficult situations, but that's real. And what we try to do with Five Wishes is lay the groundwork for the conversation and also leaving the written paper trail so that in that moment, that person who has to make that decision can think back to the conversation that they had with their mom or their dad. They can look at the copy of Five Wishes that's hopefully in the medical chart, or maybe they brought it with them. At that moment, they're not left on their own to make a decision without any guidance because they have guidance from the person, from their mother or their father or their spouse, whatever the case is. And we hear from the families that have used Five Wishes that makes all the difference in the world to not have to second guess, to wonder as a son or a daughter, did I make the right decision for my mom or dad? Did I do what they would have wanted? Did I do right by them? Did I do what I should have done? All those questions that often come up, and if there isn't a paper trail there and a memory of the conversation, it's a lot easier to second-guess yourself. But when those things are there, it does bring peace into the family and into that situation that's happening in the healthcare environment, as well as, and I would say maybe even more importantly, all the years after that, when as a family we think back about how we cared for a loved one, we can think back and know that we did the right things.
Because to know that you did the best you could do with the information you had is definitely powerful because it will put your heart at ease, I think. A lot of times when things happen so quickly, and doctors and people are moving fast and they're like, I need an answer now, and they're just standing there and you're like, it's sort of like saying, I need you to define something for me, and they can't. There just isn't enough time to explain it, to make a conscious decision about it. It's new territory. So that's pretty much what wish one and two. So wish three is talking about how comfortable you want to be. And I can say this so many times, with the new event now of palliative care and hospice care, a lot of times people think that when people are really at the end of their life, or they're just in that place where it looks like it's imminent, a life-threatening disease or whatever, and you are at the end and you have maybe months to live, people think that you just take the patient and you put them in this place, and that place does everything for them and takes care of them, when that really is so far from the truth in reality in some instances. You know, because even the idea of, I had a woman, her mother was dying recently, and she was like, they don't even give her a bath anymore. They don't even feed her. They mm-hmm. don't do all these things. And it's like, she's not dead. She's still alive. We need to pay attention. And the people just didn't.
That's so hard to hear, because it certainly shouldn't be that way, for sure. And you know, and that's exactly the reason that we added wishes 3, 4, and 5 into 5 wishes, because when we ask people what's important to you if you're sick and near the end of life, or if you have a loved one who's sick and you're caring for them, the most common responses that people come up with are, I want to be at home, I want my family to be with me, I want to be comfortable, I want my spiritual needs to be addressed, to be prayed for and prayed with, whatever the case might be, to be kept comfortable, and for my family to know that I love them. These things are often at the tops of people's minds as being most important. But most other advanced directives, certainly before 5 Wishes was created, but 5 Wishes is really one of the first documents that relates to end-of-life care and advanced care planning that lets you talk about these issues that are most important. And you're exactly right. Goodness, when someone is near the end of life, that's not the time to stop the caring. It's the time to redouble the caring. And these are the things that hospice and palliative care providers do so very well in trying to look at all the needs that a person might have and the best ways to keep them comfortable. But the thing that stands out to me in wishes 3, 4, and 5 is that these are the wishes that we actually hear the most comments about at Aging with Dignity. Now, more than 10 years after introducing 5 Wishes, a lot of families have cared for a loved one who had filled out 5 Wishes before they became sick. And their feedback to us is that it's these last 3 wishes that really become an instruction book for what good care means for that particular individual. And this is where we hear the sons and daughters saying, I want to be the best caregiver to my parents, but I don't know how to do it. I don't know where to start. And when they can look at 5 Wishes and see that their mother or their father wants to have, for example, pictures of their grandchildren in the room, or a favorite Afghan or a blanket, they can do that. It's something tangible and that they can do. And they know that they're not just grasping at straws. They're not just trying to be nice, but they're doing something that their mother or their father, whatever the case might be, they're doing something that that person thought was important enough to ask for. And that's what we hear the most about 5 Wishes, is that it turns into an instruction book for what good care means to that person. And it gives you a starting place. We've heard from many people who have said, when I was in the hospital with a loved one, I didn't know where to start when I wanted to do something for them. But then I looked at 5 Wishes, and I was able to do something. And one woman in particular, after her husband had a stroke, she said she stayed at the hospital for 2 days, didn't leave his side for 48 hours. And then she was looking at the 5 Wishes, and that he had written in one of the margins that he wanted to have his favorite Afghan with him that his wife had made for him years back. And she said, when I saw that, I knew that I should go home and get it and bring it to him. And she said she just felt so good being able to do that and bring the Afghan to his bedside and know that it would bring him comfort because he asked for it.
You know, and these are the simple things that are so important. I think we as people like to think we know the other person well enough and we could make a great decision for them. But there's a few stories that I have on this is that I can remember there was one time after a surgery, and a woman had said, you know, I'm going to go get some food for her. She hasn't eaten. I know what her favorite food is. I'm going to go get it. And she brings in this fried chicken. Well, the mother didn't have her teeth in. Her mother didn't feel good. And do you think she really wanted to be chewing on fried chicken? But the daughter had it in her mind that she remembers fried chicken with the mother. Well, the mother may have never eaten it. The mother may have thrown it away when they brought it over. You know what I'm saying? So do you really know the other person is really what point that drew out. And then also
That's
I can
true.
Remember another, yeah, you know, another person, she said, well, I said, what is your most favorite thing? She says, donuts and Creole tomatoes. Well, the next day I went to see her, I brought her donuts and Creole tomatoes when she checked into the hospital, and she never did check out. She did pass away, but she had her donuts and her Creole tomatoes. She sat there with those donuts, and she just, I mean, it was just like, it was sort of like the sun was shining on her. That was what she wanted. She just plain wanted them. And, you know, little things like that. And I could think of my own mother. My own mother, if you don't have a window open and her sitting in the sun, I mean, that will just irritate her day to no end. But yet when we are sick and we're not feeling well or in these situations, there's always drawn, closed rooms. They're dark.
Right.
You know, no windows are open. People are around or not around, you know, whatever that might be. And it's like mine would be like, park me in front of the sun, open up the doors, and go away, you know. And
right,
those are
right.
little things that people don't think to know.
That's right. And you know, when it comes to serious illness, and especially near the end of life, there is so much that we can't control and so much that we can't fix and so much that we can't maybe even and heal from a physical perspective.
Right.
But to be able to do these little things, that makes all the difference in the world to the way that
yeah.
somebody is experiencing their day.
And it's so hard, too, to have the conversation we also talk about how you would like to be thought of after you are gone, or, you know, in the in the wish five. What would you like them to know? Like, I would write down something, you know, that I would want my children to know or that I may not have said all of their life. You know, you can put it on the piece of paper, you know, or how you want to be taken care of. You know, do you want to be buried or cremated or whatever? People laugh about that, and they say, oh, well, hey, you know, what do you think? And it's like, well, I don't really know. That's why I'm asking. So
right,
it is
that's right. And a lot of
know.
Times people are surprised by the answer when they get when yeah. they come together. We've heard that so many times. The biggest example that I personally saw was when the Terri Schiavo case was playing out in public in 2005. The issue was on all throughout the media, newspapers, television. People were seeing it. And there were countless numbers of people that when they watched that on TV, they turned to their spouse or to their loved one and said, well, if I were in that situation, I would want X, Y, or Z. And
right.
the person at the other end of that conversation often said, really? I had no idea.
Yes.
So there is that assumption oftentimes that, well, everybody in my family knows me. I'm an open book. If they had to guess, they would guess right. Well, a lot of times people decide or they figure out when they're actually having this conversation that people don't know. And it can be about the really important things about medical treatment. But one other example is that I remember hearing a story of a woman who was caring for her father who had very advanced cancer. And they were filling out five wishes all around the Christmas tree together on Christmas Eve. And she said that her plan was to honor her father by inviting all of his old Army buddies together the next month in January. Because, as she said, her father was the most outgoing person she ever knew. I think he was a general in the Army. Every year he got together with his Army buddies. So she was going to pull all these guys together to celebrate his life. And she said, I knew my dad would love that because that's what he loved in life.
Right.
But when she asked him about it, he said, you know what, I don't want to be distracted by all those other guys. I want to focus on you and your mother and the grandkids. And she said, when he said it, it made total sense that he wanted to be able to focus on the family and he didn't want anything to take away from that. But she said, if I would have pulled all those guys together, he probably would have smiled and nodded and had an okay day. but it wasn't what he wanted, and she didn't know. She wouldn't have known if she hadn't asked or gotten to this section in Five Wishes where it talks about wanting to have people with you. And she said, well, Dad, what do you think about having these guys? And he said, not right now. And she wouldn't have known that otherwise.
And also the idea about wanting treatment, because so many times people come into the hospital and their person that's with them would say, you do whatever you have to do to save them. You do everything and anything. And the person's like, you know, that's just not what I really wanted. I don't need to have, you know, the next 6 months to a year or however long it might be hooked up to a zillion different machines, flown all around the country, spend all your life savings, and put people through all these stressful decisions when it really is not at all what I was looking for.
Sure, and it can become difficult, and certainly if that person, the patient in the hospital in that case, if they're conscious and if they have, you know, the ability to make their own medical decisions, then they should still be calling the shots, and doctors should be talking with them and asking them about their preferences. The hard part is, oftentimes in those emergency situations, we don't know what the outcome is, and we don't know if the person is living with a terminal, if they are in what could be described in legal terms as an end-stage condition, if that would be a trigger for the advance directive to trigger into action. So there are lots of unknowns there, and one important point there is that any advance directive, including Five Wishes, is different from a do not resuscitate order. A do not resuscitate order is a medical order. It's written and signed by a doctor. And it's an order that says that if this person's heart stops, that they shouldn't be resuscitated. It's usually written for someone who's near the end of life, someone with a terminal condition where they know what is likely to happen to them physically, what types of treatment they might require. And so the order is written based on that. But for everyone else, if you have an advance directive, in almost all states, there are what are called the trigger conditions that you have to meet before that advance directive is activated. So if somebody has an advance directive and it says, I don't want life support treatment if I'm near the end of life or terminally ill, and it would only delay the moment of my death, if they collapse on the sidewalk and the paramedics are called, the paramedics are obligated to do everything that they can to save that person, to get them to the hospital. So then the healthcare agent or their family can talk with the doctor. They can make an informed decision based on what the diagnosis is and based on what the person asked for and said that they wanted.
Because so many times your instinct as a medical professional or personnel is that you are going to do what you can until those decisions are able to be made by someone else.
Right. Right. Because some decisions can't be reversed both ways, right?
Excuse me. And when some of those can't be reversed, it's also to know that you did the best you can, really. And
that's right.
And sometimes you really have to feel that you're going to be okay because you will be the one left with the decisions you did or didn't make. And it's
true.
Even if you do fill out the five wishes, even if you don't fill them out, it's just about having the conversation so that maybe you will get an idea or a glimmer into someone else's wishes.
Right. Every little bit helps. And certainly I think healthcare providers especially appreciate having something in writing so that they know that there's backup information that supports that this is what the patient would have wanted. And even in families, I think, you know, the paper trail there is helpful more than just in legal terms, but I'm imagining a family sitting in a surgical waiting room or an ER waiting room, and one sibling who is designated as the healthcare agent, and all the siblings sitting on a couch together saying, well, what are we going to do for Mom? And when they can pull out a Five Wishes and they can look and they can see that there's some guidance there, then that one sibling who's designated as the healthcare agent doesn't have all the burden on his or her shoulders because he has a piece of paper in his hands that he can say, well, yes, we have to make a decision, but here's what Mom told us she wanted, so let's make a decision based on this, not just based on what we think she would have wanted.
Because not everybody is around the person every day, you know. Sometimes kids go off, they have their own lives, their own kids, and they base their decisions sometimes upon their remembrance of the past of the parent, you know. Like maybe when the parent was, you know, when the kids were being raised, they say, well, Mom used to do this or Dad used to do that. But it might have been 20 or 30 years ago, and you don't even realize that time has flown by, and you really don't know the person who's in front of you enough, you know, to be able to say those decisions for that day.
Sure. And people's wishes change often. You know, we see this especially during times of serious illness where someone may say, well, I wouldn't want to live in this condition or that condition. But then when they're in it, they might change their mind and say, you know, I'm willing to live with this or that if I'm able to have more time here with the family.
I think you see that a lot, too, now with Alzheimer's and dementia and things that the person may have normally done or wanted. It no longer plays a part in their life at that time. And then let's say that person now has cancer or a heart condition or whatever. And sometimes all of those other things or the ways you thought about your parent have so changed, you really have no clue about what's going on then. And you may see something playing out in front of you that you may not really think the person would have wanted, but it really may be out of your control at that point.
Sure, that's true. Very true.
And that's not what we always want to see. But, we are talking today about the reality of these issues because these are really important issues, you know. I wanted to touch back on the first one again. Also, with this health person that you would designate, they do make a lot of medical decisions for you, but they also can help make decisions like help you apply for Medicare or Medicaid, or they could take legal action to help carry out your wishes. Or they make the decisions to take away or give you help, like let's say you have to go to an assisted living or to hospice or whatever. So these are huge decisions. So for people to understand, you know, when you do appoint someone, you really want to have the conversation about what does a hospice look like? Do you even know what it is? Is hospice in a little room in a corner of a nursing home? Is a nursing home just sitting in a wheelchair out front of a window 24 hours a day? You know, what do those words mean? What is palliative care? What is hospice? And what is a nursing home? And what is assisted living? Because so many people don't know what that may mean.
Right. And those are all good and big questions for sure. And that healthcare agent, as you mentioned, there were a lot of different things that healthcare agent may be able to do for you. And legally, that structure is set up by state laws, and it's different from one state to the other. So some states may allow a healthcare agent to make decisions about placement in a nursing home or assisted living facility, and other states don't allow a healthcare agent to do that. But what's important to know is if you're naming that healthcare agent, number one, that person does not have any legal authority or legal power until you do not have legal capacity to make your own medical decisions. So if I name a best friend of mine today, as my healthcare agent, they can't walk into my doctor's office tomorrow and demand to see my medical chart or begin making medical decisions for me. They would be able to make decisions for me if I'm in an accident and I don't have the legal capacity to make my own decisions anymore. But then it depends on what powers the state allows that healthcare agent to have on your behalf. But in no case does it touch on questions of, say, for example, property or finance or money or those types of things that sometimes people hear when they hear the term durable power of attorney for healthcare. They think, oh, this is a power attorney, and I'm signing my rights away. That's not the case when it comes to a healthcare agent or a durable power of attorney for healthcare. And, you know, as far as those other big questions of, you know, what are my thoughts about hospice and long-term care. Mm-hmm. Some of those we mention in Wish 3 or requests for my doctor to tell me about options for hospice care. Certainly there are other resources that you can look at and guide conversations about you know, where you would like to receive your care, what you want your family to know, those types of things. The more the better that you can give your family to work with, the more the better in advance. It's almost impossible to cover every possible scenario that can come up.
Right.
So I would just encourage everyone not to be overwhelmed by that, because if you try to get every base, you will be overwhelmed. But if you can start with something small, then that's much better than leaving family without any type of a trail.
So can you tell us a little bit about Aging with Dignity and its outreach, and how to get these Five Wishes booklets to people? And I know you have a lot of information on your website about this.
Right, and the website is agingwithdignity.org, and we also have a national toll-free number that you can call for information. It's 1-888-5-WISHES, 888-594-7437. And so you can get Five Wishes. They're $5 each if you order individual documents, and we send that right out to you or to the person that you ask it to be sent to. But for organizations that would like to do the outreach, so I'm talking here about hospitals, hospices, physicians' offices, even Kiwanis clubs or churches or places of worship that want to put Five Wishes into the hands of their members or their employers or just people in their community or even just a family that wants to give Five Wishes to everyone in the family. If you get 25 or more, then they're only a dollar each. So for that, that helps to cover the cost of the printing and getting the documents prepared for you. We'll send them out to you, and then you have the document that you can put into the hands of neighbors, of friends, of coworkers. And for those large organizations like the healthcare providers, every hospital is required to offer some type of an advance directive to patients. So many hospitals in America have chosen to offer Five Wishes. There are now about 30,000 organizations all over the country that have distributed Five Wishes, some in small quantities, some just giving it to their employees, some, you know, having massive community efforts where they're giving out Five Wishes at shopping malls and at banks. A lot of those efforts oftentimes are geared around National Healthcare Decisions Day, which is a day in April. It's an easy one to remember because it's the day after tax day. So April 16th is National Healthcare Decisions Day. So you're likely to find there around that day maybe your hospice doing something in the community, offering a community presentation for about Five Wishes. And so that's what our work is focused on the outreach side, is helping those organizations that want to bring this message out to their community, helping them to be able to do that. And we do that not only through Five Wishes, but also many other support resources. For example, the document is translated into 26 different languages. So if a family speaks Chinese or Arabic or Russian or any others, they can have a document that they can sit together and fill out and talk about as a family in languages other than English. And we have documents for children, young adults, DVDs that can be used for family discussions or community presentations. So all of that is, the information is available either on the website, agingwithdignity.org, or by calling the toll-free number, 888-5-WISHES.
And I think it's important to notice that, because a lot of times, if, let's say you have a small business even, you know, and how many times does something happen at work? And the ambulance people or whatever would say, who is with this person? Who can answer for this person? Everybody looks at them like they've got 10 heads. You know, nobody has any answers whatsoever. And sometimes they'll say, well, I don't know. I'll pull their employment application, you know? And that
seems so
far away, because your employment application barely even works half the time. And, you know, when you put down who to contact in an emergency, how many people actually leave that blank, you know? So there really is no documents there. And everybody lives at work 5 days a week, you know, 40 hours a week. And that's so important to have something that you could do. So your office could do an outreach, or even you know, colleges, kids at school. You know, when your kids are so far away, they could be across the country. Something happens, they're like, well, try to call the mother. It's like, okay, you know. And sometimes a time delay is so critical in making decisions. And these are just a few different ideas where you and I have both said all throughout this hour about how to have an outreach to be able to have more people start thinking about the conversations, having a Five Wishes booklet, and having it signed. I don't know how many times I have spoken with people, and they said, oh, yeah, we had the conversation. Oh, yeah, we looked through the book. Did you sign it? Yeah, I signed it. Did the two witnesses sign it? And they're like, and they have to go back, and you look, and there's a line that's left open. And, and I don't know how many times, probably more than 75% of the time, when I've looked at people's booklets, there would be a line on the last page left open.
Interesting.
And then, and you look and you say, well, it's you did it all and everything, and the witness signed it, but you didn't sign it. Or your one witness didn't sign it. There would always be like one little tiny line. And that is so important to make sure that everything is filled in, you know?
Absolutely. And see it through to the end.
Yeah, and it's like that you wonder, and they said, oh, yeah, I did it, you know, and I put it over there. And you go back, and it's not signed. And that signature is so important. So I know that a lot of people would be interested in getting these booklets. And you also do, I think you have something online in case of an emergency. They can print these papers also.
Right. And not just in case of an emergency, but if you'd like to, if you're hearing this and you're motivated to get it done today, there's the option that's called Five Wishes Online. It's at the same website, agingwithdignity.org. Look for Five Wishes Online. And it lets you fill it out in this tax season. A lot of the way that many of us fill out our taxes online, where you fill in the answers, and then it creates a document that you can print out and sign. So look for the Five Wishes Online section of the agingwithdignity.org website. And one other thought, too, is that if anybody who's hearing this message is qualified to be the champion who brings the message out to everybody else around you. Because it doesn't take a medical degree or a legal degree to be the person who tells people about this who brings it to your family. So I know a lot of times people, when they hear about advanced care planning, they might think, oh, well, it's much better for that message to come from a doctor, or people will hear about it from somebody other than me.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth is, they don't, and they aren't. So if you've heard this message, then you are exactly the person to be able to bring it to others at your workplace or at a faith community or at a healthcare facility if you work there, or if very simply with your family and your friends.
And the one last thing, so many people have said to me, what do I do with it after I fill it out? And I tell them, make copies, give one to your doctor, give one to the person you have designated on the paperwork. But you know what the most important, and I tell everybody about this, if there's something that someone needs to know about you, you put it on the refrigerator on the front. Because when an ambulance comes to your house and they're looking for information, the first place they go is to your front of your refrigerator. Because what do you have there? You have pictures of your loved ones. You have telephone numbers. You have your doctor's information in case of emergency, you know?
Right. That's true.
If you turn around and you have a copy of the Five Wishes right on the front of your refrigerator, they would see that. So that is the most important thing, you know, for any age group, I think, you know, not only the elderly. It's for any age group. You stick that on the front of the refrigerator, and that is the best place.
Yep. You definitely don't want to keep it a secret. There's sometimes I've heard people say, oh, I was so glad I filled that out, and then I put it in my safe deposit box, and then I never had to think about it again. You don't want to do that.
Yeah.
You want to make sure you tell people that you filled it out and make sure, like you said, you make copies, bring it to your doctor, ask that it be included in your medical chart. Definitely make sure that the people who you've named in wish number one is your agent, your healthcare agent, and your alternates. Make sure that they know you've named them, that they've agreed to it, and that they know where your completed document is, and that it's accessible so they can get it.
Because I'll tell you, this accessible thing, I mean, myself having been through many hurricanes, accessibility is not in a safety deposit box. It is not at a bank. It is not locked in some box or put in some file cabinet someplace. It is, accessibility is on the refrigerator, nightstand, bathroom. Those, I think, are the three big ones where I find for accessibility, or in your purse, you know, or in your car.
Right.
Because, you know, banks get flooded. You know, banks go up in tornadoes. You know, things just happen in this world anymore. And it's so important to just have your own paper by yourself, by your hand, you know?
That's right. That's right.
It's crazy, huh? And on your computer is even worse, because you know what on your computer does? You got all these passwords, and everybody's like, I don't know how to
right.
figure that thing out. You're finished. So,
yep. You don't want it behind lock and key.
Right. Paper. Let's say paper on the refrigerator is number one.
Right.
Well, Paul, it has been a great having you on with us today. I know this conversation, let's hope some others will hear it and they will say that they will take that message forward and be able to share about five wishes, because I really think it's the most important piece of paper ever.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we're happy to help. So whatever, as each person is motivated, whatever they need, we can get the information and all the backup material to them. So just come to our website and check it out. Dr. Galler, it was great to be with you. A real pleasure today. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much. And, you know, it is important to note that if you have a question, you can always call. You can always call Aging with Dignity and say, you know, I was thinking about doing it. I don't know where to start. I was thinking about doing it. How do I find out more? Or I was thinking about doing it, and I don't know what this means. You know, you guys can, you will answer any and every question. There's no question that would be silly. Ask any questions, I think. You know, sometimes people get inundated with websites, and they're like, well, I kind of, you know, started looking, but I didn't get it. They can always call
sure.
you, and I've done that. You know, you call, yep. and you say, I want to start, and I don't know where, and they will help you.
Yep. That's right, and we have people here answering the phones. I know you have
yeah.
broad listenership, so 9 to 5 Eastern time, Eastern time zone. If you're calling outside of that time range, then just leave a message, and we'll give you a call right back. But either that toll-free number, 888-5-WISHES, or the website, agingwithdignity.org, that will give you all of our information.
Well, thank you so much for being with us today. I do appreciate it.
Thank you, Dr. Gallagher.
Thank you, and have a great day.
You too.
And if anyone would like more information about Five Wishes and about their website, if maybe you missed that, on today's show description of the show page, there are links directly to the website where you'll be able to get a copy of Five Wishes. And please do have the conversation, because it is so important. It's always, you know, when you hit that wall, you just want to make sure that you've got yourself kind of over some of these questions and have somebody around you that's really will be able to take care of you. And that's so important to do that. And, you know, do it before you hit the wall, because once you hit the wall, you know, there's really not any going back. So thank you so much for being with us today, and please do start the conversation. Have a great day.